I'm Gene Matthews. I see some of my CDC colleagues in the audience. I also was honored to serve as the chief legal counsel of CDC for many years. So I'm now with the Network for Public Health Law, Southeastern Center based in Chapel Hill, funded with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're trying to build connections on public health law to assist the practice of public health, something I was originally involved with at CDC. But I want to talk about what's happening in local public health with sort of a national overview of how this is playing out in a legal context. But I can't resist. This is the Providence Room, okay? Providence One, right? Comes from Providence Community, which is 12 miles south of here in an old Scotch-Irish Presbyterian church named Providence Church, of which I grew up right across from it on a farm in very rural farming country when I was a kid. My dad and his ancestors, you know, farmed rocks there mostly, but he told about when he was a kid that they would come to Charlotte to bring their crop in, their cotton or whatever, and the farmers' exchange was literally at the beginning of Charlotte, right down the hill here on Trade Street, on East Trade. And of course, I remember growing up here in the 50s and 60s, and it looked nothing like out here now. This could be Chicago or wherever. And I just want to draw that analogy to what's happened over the 20th century in public health. And I sort of have put a very subtle, low-key caption here of moving from the political kill zone to the Great Reset, and talk a little bit about that. Public health has gone through a strange change, and I encourage you, I give you the link here, it's in your little memory stick, at the bottom of the slide is Dan Goldberg's article that came out in the January issue of AJPH, against the very idea of the politicization of public health policy. I'm going to talk a little bit about politics. I mean, I'm a retired federal annuitant and an 11-year cancer survivor. I'm the most unsupervised speaker you'll probably have this year. So I can just, you know, let it out there. Public health, I would say in the first half of the 20th century, was closely ingrained to local state politics, even federal politics. You know, Thomas Paine's Shadow on the Land in 1937 about sexually transmitted disease was a stone-cold political act to get resources, to get focus, to get attention. Okay. Well, somewhere, I would say in the 1950s or 60s, public health sort of drifted away from that, and we have had this academic debate between narrow public health and broad public health. Narrow espousing the view that we're science-driven, you know, we come up with good conclusions and recommendation, but we don't get ourselves dirty with what happens at the Charlotte City Council or the North Carolina General Assembly, or God forbid, anything that happens around the Potomac River, because that's for the policymakers to do. As you could probably tell, I come from the other side of the street on that. I do believe in the broad public health. And public health, Dan Fox from Milbeck Memorial Foundation wrote on this and really educated me to this in my career at CDC, of how public health moved away and became almost apolitical. We were non-political. And we suffered from that. Our cousins in governance didn't do that. Think of the people down the hall in your local or state government. You know, agriculture, okay, they maintain their political alliance with the farm bloc. I mean, to this day, the reapportionment of congressional districts still follows agricultural precedents. Education here in this state, in Raleigh-Wake County, there's a knockdown, drag-out fight to be of who's going to be elected to the Wake County School Board. Okay, nobody's fighting to be who's going to be on the Board of Health. You know, and transportation again. You know, they have their allies, they have their alternate voices. When we had the economic stimulus bill roll out in 2007 and 2008, it was for shovel-ready projects. Shovel-ready what? It wasn't shovel-ready for public health. It was bricks and mortar, and they probably built some underpasses around here with that. So we lost out in a zero-sum game or in a falling market, as Kay just gave you the statistics. We are singularly unskilled at competing against our other cousins in government about what it is that we do and to compete, you know, with those political things. So, you know, we've got to rebuild that skill set. So what has just happened? And I unfold this in other context, but I won't do it here. I mean, this is the kill zone. And if you just sort of look through, we had the 2007 economic downturn, which was buffered for a while because of the economic stimulus bill pouring money to state governments, which protected to a certain extent state and local, and the funding streams coming out of CDC were kept alive for a period of time. Okay, but that game's over. All right, then we had, as part of the presidential election 4 years ago, the health reform, quote, mandate. We pretty well had a temporary consensus in this country that we can no longer tolerate 40 to 50 million people being uninsured due to pre-existing condition and unaffordable access to health care. So a bill which has maybe two more days in its current incarnation was enacted, maybe a C-minus piece of legislation, okay, but to deal with that. And then the election of 2010, the mid-year election, clearly we have a consensus at that time in this country that we cannot mortgage the future of my children and my grandchildren because of the deficit spending. So here we are, almost invisible to elected officials, without the political skill set, siloed, as Don talked about in the plenary session, trying to figure out. We're sitting here in a political kill zone with calls to cut back taxes, reduce government, downsize government, etc. And so we cannot sit in this kill zone. We have to move out. And that's what Paul gave you an example of how he had to move out of there. So let me also posit then three very uncomfortable questions. I heard Pat Libby do this at a Wisconsin presentation, and I think we need to lay it out there before we get to the where do we go from here. And so the three uncomfortable questions are, is we have 2,700, give or take 100, local health departments in this country. So the uncomfortable questions are, do we need 2,700 local health departments? Can we afford 2,700 local health departments? And if we want to do anything about it, is it politically feasible to change the status quo? Okay? I don't have the answers to those, but I submit that we're going through that kind of discussion now. As part of my work with the Network for Public Health Law, we hosted a meeting in New Orleans, and several of you in this room were there for that back in March. to look at sort of the legal aspects of these changes that are pressuring local health departments. And I think we found that these changes array out on two different dimensions. And this is the first dimension. It's sort of the traditional governance and organizational changes. And so you've got a Robert Wood Johnson initiative on cross-jurisdictional sharing. How does Kane County collaborate with the adjoining counties? That can be as simple as informal handshake agreements, going all the way up to districting, is what we call it in North Carolina, or regionalization, the merging of adjoining health departments. And so there's a call for proposals out on the street right now from Pat Libby and Gianfranco Pizzini out of Kansas Health Institute to fund some projects on that, much along the lines of the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. You see the issue of merging local health departments and other agencies into consolidated human services agency. Winters Mabry talked about how the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Health Department is a consolidated human service agency. We also have quasi-independent public health authorities. We have one or two in this state. Cabarrus County has one with Fred Pilkington. Gary Cox and Bruce Dart down in Oklahoma are doing work in this area as well. And then there's the issue of changing or eliminating boards of health. Okay. Now, our esteemed North Carolina General Assembly just did all of this last week. A bill has gone to the governor to give all counties the option to merge their health department into a consolidated human service agency and to either have their board of health become part of an umbrella human service board, or to eliminate the board and let the county commissioners be the board of health, as is the case in Charlotte. But Charlotte is, what, $100 million, give or take. To do that in a county of 5,000, of which we have some in North Carolina, how much energy expertise is going to deal with that? I have my qualms about it. But this bill went through late on the altar of we need to simplify government and cut costs and eliminate unnecessary layers, and you know the rest of it. So this is going on. My colleagues at the UNC School of Government, which was also referenced in the plenary session, have done some work on this through Public Health Systems and Services Research, looking at the various types, the four different types of local health department structures here in North Carolina. And it's interesting, like you have in Buncombe County variation where you've got almost a consolidated human service agency, but it's not quite, but you have the social services sharing members with the health board of health, holding joint meetings. You have integrating administrative information technology, human resources services, and some location. You have a small county. Buncombe County is Asheville, North Carolina, and a fairly high tourist traveled area. Greene County is more remote with less resources, works on arrangements to sharing an environmental health specialist with adjoining counties in a much more informal arrangement of cross-jurisdictional sharing. One of the findings that came out of this report, and again, the link is on the bottom of the screen, and I have some copies of it in my room here if anybody wants the full report. Very brilliant work that Amy Wall and Jill Moore did. Found out that all the stakeholders here stress the importance of strong leadership in making any type of public health agency work, whether you're a regional, whether you're a consolidated human service agency, whether you're an individual county. The stakeholders also emphasize, and this gets back to the politics, the need for local elected officials, health practitioners, administrators working together. That's what's important regardless of the agency type. But nevertheless, we're moving in this state at least to give an option of counties to move away from what at least here was a traditional public health structure. So those were along one dimension of these traditional changes. The other dimension, and again, Paul touched on this in his, is moving towards the outcome-based health care and billing arrangements. Again, this is what Don talked about in our plenary. So you get collaborations of health departments with federally qualified health centers, which saved Paul's bacon in Kane County when he had to get rid of the clinical services. You have collaborations with hospitals. The Affordable Care Act has the provision about community health needs assessment are mandated now for nonprofit hospitals in order to maintain their tax-exempt status. Many health departments, every health department here in North Carolina already has a community health assessment. So this is a no-brainer for collaboration, for community coalition building, for working together. The alignment with the new Affordable Care Act entities, again, this, as Don talked about in the plenary, this is going to go on regardless of what the Supremes do on Thursday of health information exchanges, accountable care organizations, patient-centered medical homes, of working with these new creatures that are going to come out of the funding mechanism. It's part of the change driving us. And then adding or removing clinical care. Again, you have some, within this very state, you have some local health departments like Paul getting out of the clinical care business, and in other places they're getting back into the Medicaid reimbursement as sort of the default option in a low-resource county. So you see that playing out. Needless to say, I'm a lawyer up here. There's got to be something legal here, right? All of those issues on both dimensions are knee-deep in legal issues. So you can just pick them and run with them. Healthcare, electronic data sharing, application of your state interlocal agreement acts, which every state has an interagency local agreement act to do sharing among jurisdictions. The whole reimbursement rules of CMS, which are, as complex, I guess, as immigration law is. The Affordable Care Act implications on local health departments. And I think this is really an important piece, too, and the link is below to some work coming out of the Stanford Social Review. The creation of backbone organizations to support local health departments in these new collaborative arrangements. In other words, who owns the problem? If you've got two counties and three hospitals working together on a community health assessment, what is the critter that owns it? And there's some brilliant work on this that's coming out of the Stanford Social Review and Innovations. I commend that link to you as well. My time's about up. Let me just bring this to a close. Where do we go from here? And I submit there are sort of four things in a short term to long term that we need to be focused on. First of all, we simply need to restructure in order to stop the bleeding. I mean, a lot of local public health is bleeding out on the side of the road, and we got to get a tourniquet around it. This is what Paul had to do. You were going to bleed to death in another year and a half in Kane County. And many health departments are facing that, and you see the numbers that Kay gave. We need to make the jobs case for elected officials. We have been spectacularly incompetent as a public health profession in making that case, which is very simple. Okay? A healthy community is an economically viable community. An unhealthy community is not competitive to get jobs to come to this county. Okay? It is part of governance. And many elected officials don't even realize community health is their responsibility. They know about building roads or schools or, you know, making sure the farms are all taken care of. But public health, that's not me. We've got to work on that. And then last, my last point is we need to anticipate this great reset that we're going through. Our plenary's talked about something very difficult is taking place here. And I commend to you Richard Florida's book, The Great Reset, New Ways of Living and Working, Drive Post-Crash Prosperity. The end of his story is that these cycles have appeared, and there are other cyclical treatises out right now that you can pick up in the airport. The Fourth Turning is another one that I'm in the middle of. But in this country, we had a cycle that began in the panic of 1873 and really ran all the way up to the 1900s with the Industrial Revolution, where we changed our living patterns, our working patterns, our social patterns. We moved from agrarian to industrial. All right. Henry Ford tripled his wages for the Ford workers because he needed somebody to buy his cars. Okay. That lasted really till the crash of 1929, and we went through this other cycle. And out of that came this social contract of 1940-1950 that health care and retirement were paid for in a business model that came out of the workplace. Okay? Now that business model is dead. It's not functioning in 2012. Okay? We've got to come up with another model. And as Florida talks about, we're really those good old factory jobs. Both political parties say we need to bring them good jobs back. Okay, you hear this here a lot. All right, well, those jobs aren't coming back, okay? Cannon Mills shipped the textile equipment to Brazil when they closed Cannon Mills up here in Kannapolis, okay? That way of life is not changed. Richard Florida talks about, we're looking towards a 30% of our workforce that does a lot of the creative, the IT, some of the remaining professionals, the business, small businesses, etc. The 70% of the workforce are in the service area. They're the ones that, you know, serve the food at restaurants and take care of your busted transmission and get your air conditioning to working and take care of me when I'm in my nursing home. And those service jobs, how do we create a system for health care and retirement in that? Now, this is a long debate that's taking place. It's a decade-long problem. And my closing point here is that public health has to be at the table as we debate and solve this problem of the Great Reset. We need the political skill sets. As our plenary mentioned, we need to do it better and not be part of the silos. So that's my piece. We have more on this, the legal aspects of this. I don't believe the rant's on the website, but the legal aspects and resources and so forth, dealing with the local health department restructuring and organization, and so more to come on that. I look forward to your question. Thank you.